Hi, this is Garth Schoenefeldt. I'm the General Manager of Artisan Beverage Cooperative, crafters of Catalyst Kombucha, Ginger Libation, and Green River Ambrosia Meads, right here in Greenfield, Massachusetts. You are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 87. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rio Wincoller and I am the producer and the cider MC of this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week we are speaking with Garth Schoenefeldt, who is the general manager at a pretty interesting operation where they make not only kombucha, mead, and ginger libations. But what Garth didn't mention in his introduction is they also make cider. All these wonderful libations we'll be talking about in this week's chat. There'll be more on that in just a moment. To everyone out there in Ciderville, welcome back. And if you are new to this podcast, well, you should know that the first part of this segment, we talk a little bit about what's happening in Ciderville out in the greater world as we know it. And then we start the actual main chat. And this week, again, is with Garth Schoenefeldt. That goes probably about 10 or 12 minutes in to this chat. You could always fast forward if you don't want to catch up with everything. But why would you want to do that? Because this is a time that I like to give you little ditties that I catch here and there. And one of the things I want to do straight away is to catch you up with a little tip that I didn't really add into last week's episode. So before we get there, I'm going to encourage you to maybe grab a glass, make yourself comfortable, or if you're driving, you know, keep your hands on the wheel. You got your metal to the pedal or the foot to the pedal. Or you're driving or you're dealing with crazy people out on the highway, sit back, enjoy the ride, and we'll be right back with that little ditty in just a moment.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. It's a rat a tat a rat a tat a rat a tat a bala rat a tat a rat a tat a rat a tat a holla. I don't wanna be pushed like a dude the push when it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a dude the gank when it comes to the cake, be me you think. I don't wanna be pushed like a dude the push when it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a dude the gank when it comes to the cake, be me you think.
Ow, are you hollering a rat-a-tat-tat-tat-ta holler? Ooh, yeah. It's summer. It's summer where I am in Ciderville, and it's just a glorious time of the year. As hot as it gets, I know I always have a wee bit of a cider to just keep the knot chillin', and I hope that's true for you. All right, let's get back to that little bit of a tip that I wanted to talk about regarding a cider presses. And I know a lot of folks out there might be commercial, but there's a lot of us who are both non-commercial, but might have the same kind of press, even as a new upstart cidery could have in their little backyard. And that's a wooden cider press that's held together by bolts and whatnot. Well, one of the things I didn't mention on last week's podcast, I just acquired an 1880 or something cider press. And even though the wood has been replaced, those bolts on the new wood could get a little bit loose. So when you hold on to that cider press, it's a little bit wobbly. One of the things you want to do with a cider press before you start pressing is to water that sucker down and do it for, you know, a couple days ahead of time. And what happens is the wood will contract. Is that right? Expand? It'll expand as the water soaks into the wood, and that will then help the bolts tighten, which is a good thing indeed, because once that wheel starts turning, whether you're hand cranking it or you get a little motorized operation, you don't want it to get all wobbly. That gets unsafe. And some of these old cider presses can be kind of wobbly. Oh boy, that's just one of those things that sometimes you know it and sometimes you don't. And it's a good little tip to put in your back pocket and to pass along. I'm sure a lot of folks out there are working with kind of wobbly presses, and just a little bit of water can make a big difference in safety and making sure that the press is working to its peak performance, which is what it's all about. And if you have a tip like that, which I kind of call, like, you know, country sensibility, if you will, where it just kind of makes sense, do pass it along, and I'll make sure that everyone out in Ciderville knows that too. Now I'm going to take a little bit of a sip here on my cider because I can, and I'll be right back with you as we welcome in some of the new folks out there in Ciderville who have just joined the Cider Chat Facebook page. Yes, summertime. Well, let's go straight ahead to the Cider Chat Facebook page and welcome some of the new folks who have just joined that community. And the first hello goes out to Sarah. Hello, Sarah. I don't know where you're from, but welcome. And then we have Aaron, who is from Japan. Welcome, Aaron. And also another person from Japan. That's JWC, Japan Wine Challenge. And dang, there's just so much good news coming out of Japan all the time. They're really busting out a lot of little cider fests. And certainly, if you don't know, there is an episode. It's number 51 with Marie Tanaka, and she was talking about the Japan cider scene. So I really recommend you giving that a listen, because that's just going to be one other place in the world that cider is going to keep on going up. And then we have Brandon, who is from Virginia. Let's see, we have another person from Virginia, and that is Matt. So two folks from Virginia. There is a good cider route there. CiderCon is going to be taking place. That's a United States Association of Cider Makers annual conference. And I don't know how far Baltimore is from some of the cideries in Virginia. Hopefully not too long of a ride. So that's good news for everyone. And then we're going to go all the way over to, I believe, maybe Australia. I'm not sure. But we have Spencer, who just joined the Facebook page at Cider Chat. And then back to the U.S., to Texas, and saying hey to Amanda. And then we have Adam from Indiana and Andrew from California. I can't help it. I always have to say it that way. It's just in my mind. And then we have Tim from Ontario. And that is totally a place, a region. All of Canada have the most amazing people. And definitely some fantastic cider. So I don't know where you are necessarily, Tim, but I hope that you are close by some cider and enjoying what your great country has to offer there. And then we're going to go all the way over to Sweden now and welcome Jimmy and Sweden. I did have a Swedish cider maker on this chat. That is Andreas Sugren. And let's see, he is episode number 39 from Brönlund Cider. And he makes ice ciders, and soon he's going to have a new U.S. cider maker heading his way, in case you didn't hear. But Eden's Ice Cider up in Vermont, their cider maker Dave and his wife Tegan are heading to Sweden. So bon voyage, and boy, a little bit I know about Andreas and everybody is going to be a good times. I know I've mentioned this a couple times, but I'm stoked. I'm stoked for Eden because Eleanor, she's done such an amazing job for ice cider, not only in the U.S., but also helping Andreas. And now geez, Dave's going over there. It's beautiful how that interplay goes. So tip of the hat to all those good folks. And then let's see, I have one other person, and that's Sean from Big B's Juice, Hard Cider and Delicious Orchards. And Sean is the head cider maker. You go, Sean. And don't you know that that's a region of Colorado that I absolutely adore? That's called the Western Slope. Colorado is divided up with, like, I think the Front Range, which is like Denver. And then you go over the Continental Divide and you have the Western Slope. And I have some good folks who I consider family living right in your backyard. Peonia, I've been to. That's a hot diggity town. Way out there, but it's all these like beautiful mesas and it's just huge, big, big sky type of country and good hiking. I love that area. Way before kind of cider took off the way it was and I was going out and visiting my friends and family out in Peonia, I noticed all the orchards and fruit wines that were being made. So it just goes to figure that, of course, Big B's, who I believe puts on a cider fest in that region in October, we'll stay tuned more to that, are now, you know, hot on the cider trail and doing what they're doing. So if you're passing through to Colorado, I really recommend taking a detour down to the Western Slope region of Peonia and check out all the great people out there. And I want to say hi to my dear friends who are in that region right now. Lots of love and kisses to you all. Okay, well, you know, that's the way it gets for me. Come on, already. It's Ciderville. I know people, and through this podcast, I'm getting to know more people, and I feel like one of the luckiest ducks in the world because of that. And it's just all about cider going up and certainly friendships, too. All right, we're going to take a little break here in a couple seconds break here, and then we're going to kick right into our main chat on kombucha and mead and sizer, and we'll be talking to Garth coming right up. Well, on a hot day not too long ago, I went into Greenfield, Massachusetts, which is part of Franklin County, which is also where Cider Days takes place. And perhaps you've met this chap pouring the Green River Ambrosia, some ginger libations, and if you're lucky enough to have some of the sizer at Cider Days. Garth has been kicking around this valley for a while, and I was more than happy to sit back with him at the Artesian Beverage Cooperative and have this chat. You'll find out more about sizer and certainly my passion for this lovely, delectable drink. But Art Bev is an interesting business because it is a cooperative, so I thought, why not bring this to Ciderville? One, for the business aspect, and two, because, you know, I love sizer like I like cider. In fact, I find the two, well, just go under my category of cider, though you might disagree. I'll let Garth explain how he defines sizer, and we'll take it from there. In the meanwhile, let's kick back now and grab a glass with Garth Shandyfelt of Artesian Beverage Cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Both Garth and I are from Franklin County in Massachusetts, and I know that you've been in this business for a while too. So let's first start with what exactly this business is, because your intro at the beginning of the show, there's a lot of little pieces there, kombucha, the ginger libations, all these like different pieces. So can you give us a snapshot of what this company is and all your different areas that you're working on?
Sure. We went into business because we're like, why do it easy? Let's make a bunch of things that we have to explain everything to everyone. And so the kombucha business was actually started by Will and Jeff back in 2005. Mm-hmm. They were living in a nearby intentional community, and they had been sort of home brewing it. It was pretty popular there, and they decided to come over here to the Franklin County Community Development Corporation. Mm-hmm. Had a reasonably new shared kitchen facility at that time, and they were able to rent kitchen space, rent storage space, and start making their kombucha commercially. So they started with that. I met them a couple years later at an annual meeting, and I had been doing some home brewing of beer and had sort of just got into mead. Mm-hmm. I played Dungeons and Dragons as a kid, so I knew all about mead, Beowulf, spear and magic helmet, the whole nine yards.
Perfect.
In 2007, there was very little commercial mead available out there, certainly in this area of the country. Mm-hmm. So there was both that, and we're like, how come we can't get good mead out there? And people were just starting to really, starting to be more news around colony collapse disorder.
You're talking about bees now, colony collapse of beehives.
Beehive. Mm-hmm. Getting mites and other diseases, mm-hmm. and things like that. And this is a very agricultural area. And so we got to talking just about fermenting and being like, hey, how come nobody's doing mead? Somebody should do mead. And we're like, we could do mead. Mm-hmm. And the kombucha facility had just expanded from being in the shared kitchen here to their own little spot. And at that time, they're like, oh my God, this is a huge amount of space. This is great. Look at all, we have all this extra room. And so we're like, wow, we could take half of that and do it as a meadery. So we started off, we got about 150 demijohns. So these Italian blown glass, 15-gallon kind of carboy things for anybody who does home brewing. Mm-hmm. And we started with those on metro shelving. We were able to...
Metro shelving is...
It's that metal sort of industrial shelving. Okay. You can kind of clip together and change the shelf height. And it was 2007, was of course just before the economy collapsed. Mm-hmm. So I would get about 3 credit card offers a week about 0% for a year, which is great if you're making mead because it, unlike, sort of a beer is sort of a 3-week turnaround time. Mead, you're looking at minimum 9 months, mm-hmm. ideally 1 year, 2 year, et cetera, mm-hmm. pushing mm-hmm. it out there. So we were able to basically start up the company on, American Express's 0% offers.
Oh my goodness, wow. And why does that work well? Because you were able to take out the cash that you needed. And
yeah, well, we were able to
sell it a year later so that you're able to pay back that credit card.
Yep. And we were, and I mean, obviously we were also piggybacking on the kombucha company. So the kombucha company was paying full rent for their space. Okay. This is a community development corporation. They're not into just jacking up the rents and making it as expensive as possible, but they were paying for this expanded space. Mm-hmm. They didn't happen to be using it all yet. Mm-hmm. And within about, within the first year, we did start paying rent, sort of sublet rent to mm-hmm. Catalyst Kombucha.
But it was 15 of these demijohns.
Yeah, well, they're 15-gallon demijohns that come in a big basket. And we had close to 100 of those.
100 of them, okay. Sorry, yeah.
And we would do... So it was sort of a evenings and weekends. So I was otherwise employed in the 3 or 4 days a week. The kombucha company was still cranking out kombucha here, mm-hmm. bottling it, mm-hmm. Shipping it out, making kegs, all that good stuff. And so on Friday afternoon and Saturday, we would do mead brewing, into these demijohns, or we'd do racking.
Wow. What was the business plan here? Was there a business plan, or was it just credit cards can we get?
Well, there was no particular business plan except for let's make some mead and see if we can sell it. It was a reasonably, low startup. We were making, a batch would be somewhere around, I want to say maybe 30 cases at a time kind of thing. Which if you're hand corking those with a hand overhead corker, even swapping off between three of us, we'd spend all Saturday corking and labeling. Sweating
through that, yeah.
And
everybody knows
and
that.
And nobody could lift their arm on Sunday. Wow. So we all just flop around with dead arms for a while.
Now, before we go further, let's talk about mead and how you define it.
So mead is just wine that's made with honey. So at its most basic, it's just water, honey, and yeast. In theory, the oldest alcoholic beverage, because it could actually exist pre-agriculture. It exists in most cultures. Mm-hmm. Anywhere there's bees, really, anywhere there could be honey, it could be fermented. Mm-hmm. The tej is the national drink of Ethiopia, which is basically mead with various spices and roots in it.
And tej is a drink.
Yeah, it's a mead.
Right.
And it's and Ethiopia is also where you have a lot of these hanging honey hives, so coming off the cliffs. So it's plausible. It at least makes a good story that pre 15,000 years ago, pre-agricultural humans, during the rainy season, the water would flow through these hives on the cliff, collect in some sort of basin at the bottom.
Yeah.
Little pool, wild yeast, there's the original cool ship right there.
Wow.
And some hunter-gatherer comes around, fills up his goat bladder or his gourd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait a minute, now we're on to something.
Indeed.
So obviously, it's become much more refined. There's lots of different varieties now.
And absolutely. And we're going to get to that. Mead is, as you said, water, yeast, and honey.
Yeah.
But there's also cider. Were you also making cider at the same time as mead?
So our first batch, which ended up being slightly explosive, was just one with water. We very quickly started using, because we originally formed the company because we were concerned about bees. We wanted to support local beekeepers. Mm-hmm. So we buy all our honey locally.
Mm-hmm.
We read from Ken Schramm's great book, The Complete Mead Maker. And we're like, oh, cider, that's another local product. We have, we're an amazing area for apples, lots of great orchards. We talked to Clarkdale, Pine Hill, mm-hmm. Clark Brothers, all these folks within, 15 minutes of us mm-hmm. or so.
Absolutely.
And so we started making cider as well.
And let's define what cider is.
So a cider is basically mead made with honey. So there's, there's some cider.
A mead made with honey?
Mead made with cider rather than water.
Right.
So there's some ciders that add honey mm-hmm. add some amount of honey for mm-hmm. sweetness. In order to officially be a mead, and there's a little bit of fuzziness around this.
I was wondering if there's a little fuzziness of it, because I've made a lot of what I call sizers.
Right. In theory, and the American Mead Makers Association is pushing for better definitions of that, so that it's a mead if you have more than 50% of your fermentables from honey.
Okay.
Sort of makes sense. Like otherwise, so you can do a braggot, which is a beer made with honey, but it's not a mead with malt, or you could have a cider with honey, or you have a mead that happens to have some cider, many cider makers will also add some amount of sugar. Of some variety. It sort of depends on your apples and what you're going for.
If they're making a cider?
No, if you're making a a cider. A lot of people will add.
I think everybody out there in Ciderville is like doing nails on a scratch bar right now. Whoa! Well, I think that's changed quite a bit. Maybe the larger producers might be adding some sugar. And there is certainly being used to back sweeten.
Yeah.
But so we have mead, and we're talking sizer. And it's a mead sizer. If more than 50% has honey, that's what we're going to go for, right? Yeah. And then it's a cider sizer. If it's in my mind, and right. I should probably
if it's a cider with some amount of honey in it, or it's a honey sweetened cider, or honey.
Yeah. And I just love the honey. You know, the honey, what it does as it ages and how you get kind of smoky and the complexities, that base with like an apple. And
right,
what an apple
right.
does
is like, amazing, amazing apple varieties.
Yeah.
And that's what's great around here as well. Like you get the terroir of the honey because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes there'll be the bees feeding on those apple blossoms.
Yeah.
And then you get the cider. You know, whether it's, you know, Macoun, Greenings, you know, any of these Roxbury russets.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went to them and asked them, can you get us a real cider? You know, we didn't just want a bunch of pressed Macs. It's mm-hmm. lovely for sugar. It's not so great for complexity. And especially with pairing with a, you know, we use Duel raw honey, so we don't boil the honey. So you're getting the flavors mm-hmm. from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you really get the whole taste of the valley.
From
both the apples and the honey, so you know, multi bloom, multi varieties. I think one of the first years they had 15 different apple varieties in there. You know, obviously a lot of the sort of the base stuff that's going to give you sweetness, mm-hmm. but then a lot of that sort of interesting, mm-hmm. You know, sort of real old heirloom cider apples, which is a really nice flavor in there.
So exciting. I just love that honey and apple, and I love what you said in terms of the whole taste of the valley. I think that's really unique to that local use of honey, and this is a company that really is all about local and really sustainable.
Yeah, we try to do as much as possible all with local stuff. I mean, obviously, we do some of our ginger libation. We do a version that's a local libation where we're able to get local ginger, and we combine that again with local cider
mm-hmm.
And Massachusetts grown cranberries to make our local version.
And this is a bottle right here. It's a really fun, kind of whimsical labeling that you have. There'll be some photos up on the show notes and out on social media.
Yeah, the guy who did all our initial label design or sort of logo design did a lot of band posters, and it sort of comes through. You sort of get that little bit of a 60s vibe.
Yeah, 60s, 70s.
Right. You know, it's the age of Aquarius. Here we go.
Yeah. But, you know, it stands out, and I noticed that walking into the building, too. I love the posters that you had up here. So this is called Local Libation. It says cranberry straight across.
Yep.
And, again, what is a local libation exactly?
So the ginger libation is sort of the base libation, and according to TTB, so we're registered as a farmer winery.
Okay.
So it is a wine.
Like many cideries.
Yep. Like most of the cider, it's mm-hmm. it's a wine, even though they have, you know, you have to jump through all the gazillions of hoops, and they don't let you use like actual terroir things because
right.
they're like,
or vintage.
You're not Napa, right. you're not vintage, right. whatever. But it's like
not
that's
yet.
Actually pretty important, you know.
Right.
So I think it's moving in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's a lot more cider makers now, you know, and people
pushing that
and making
definitely.
Great stuff. So the ginger libation is ginger, pineapple, and lemon lime.
Mm-hmm.
And we started making that on the mead side. One of our owners had been doing some home brewing and had found out he had sort of gluten intolerance issues, and had been sort of just kind of looking through old recipes for, you know, his great book, Ancient and Herbal Healing Brews, mm-hmm. By Stephen Buhner, sort of all these crazy different brews that, you know, mugwort beer and nettle beer and all that stuff from
mm-hmm.
from back in the day, and he had been experimenting with this ginger libation, or sort of he just called it a ginger beer at the time, mm-hmm. And people really liked it, and he sort of brought that to the company and was like, hey, this is something we might want to try making. It ferments more like a beer, so it's a quicker turnaround because we are just fermenting.
There was some heat involved.
Yeah, a little bit for the sort of extracting the ginger initially,
right?
And it's more like a beer in that it ferments in more of like a 2 to 3 week rather than it's not a year process to make it.
But also like a soda. Too, making a soda.
Right.
Yeah. Like a natural root beer or vanilla soda. 2 weeks is like a good average versus producing it one day and shipping it out and just chock full of sugar.
Right, yeah. So it's got a little, and so we currently have it. It's bottle conditioned, so it gets a little mm-hmm. fizz in the bottle.
Yeah.
So we worked with the recipe, sort of tweaked it, made some test batches. Came out with something we thought we could do commercially, and it's really really taken off, certainly here in the valley and really around the region. We're sort of certainly New England-ish distributed.
Is your product, is it distributed outside of New England at this point?
Just a little bit.
A little bit, okay.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of ginger libation in Texas. There's a little bit in Florida, a little bit in the Carolinas, sort of pockets.
Mm-hmm. And would that be like in Austin, Texas, as a guess?
Yep, Austin, Austin, Houston, Dallas, small areas.
Small areas that are hip too.
Yeah.
Different kind of libations. How about down in Florida?
Orlando, I just got a Facebook post today from somebody putting it on in Fort Lauderdale.
Nice.
A little gastropub down there.
Great.
We work with the Shelton Brothers Importers, which does a lot of ciders and sort of interesting ciders and beers and
mm-hmm.
such.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty teeny percentage of our stuff. Primarily, we're in the New England area.
Yeah. So, I got a little off track of where I wanted to originally go. We got right into the product because it's so exciting. I want to backpedal here just a little bit and talk about a little bit more about the honey mm-hmm. and the bees. And I know that there must be a lot of honey coming into this facility. How much honey do you go through per year to make your libations for the sizers?
I think last year we did about 6,000 or 7,000 pounds of honey. Almost all local. We did do one special batch last year.
How is that coming in like 5 gallon?
We're getting containers? It in 5 gallon buckets. A lot of people get it in drums. We don't have a honey pump, and it's sort of easier to balance things when it's just in buckets. And a lot of the smaller beekeepers, well, not smaller, but the sort of the mid-sized beekeepers. Are going to package stuff mm-hmm. In buckets just because that's an easier size to work with. Most people are going to buy it, and even at a commercial level are going to buy 5 gallon buckets. It's only really the meaderies or other like product producers that are going to use a drum worth of
mm-hmm.
of stuff. So we started working mostly with. Dan Conlon down at Warm Colors Apiary in Deerfield.
Very known, a very well-respected beekeeper, like the father of the bees for this entire region.
Yeah.
He goes down to Georgia every year, brings back nukes. These are little colonies of bees that people then go there and around this time of year, pick up their nukes and plant,
get their new hives going.
Yeah.
And he's also been involved in breeding Russian queens, mm-hmm. which seem to be somewhat more resistant to the varroa mites and some mm-hmm. of the diseases that the European honeybees mm-hmm. were susceptible to.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they're good Russian bees. They have the fuzzy little hats, and they're more able to survive through our winters up here.
I kind of like hanging out with the Italian bees. You know, we'd sit around, drink a little bit of wine.
That's right. You'd have a cigarette, you know, espresso. It's all good, right? Yeah, so we worked with him. We also work with New Hampshire Honeybee, which is a veteran-owned business up in the Keene, New Hampshire area. And I think they actually consolidate from a number of smaller beekeepers in the area, and they'll sort of process it all. But again, it's really nice raw honey with really the terroir, you know, sort of working that Connecticut River Valley. We've gotten some from further up in Vermont.
Wonderful.
But also all along that area. And
Have you raised bees yourself?
When we first started the business, and it was sort of the hobby side, Will and Sam had a few beehives at their house.
Nice.
And they would, I don't think we ever got enough to make a batch of mead out of.
How much goes into like a batch of mead? Like if somebody's listening here who's not commercial, but they want to make mead, like 5 gallons.
So for a 5 gallon, it depends. There's a lot of varieties of mead.
Sure.
If you want a dry mead, if you want a sweet mead, but you know you're going to need somewhere between 12 and 15 pounds of honey for a 5 gallon batch.
That's quite a bit of honey,
which is it's pretty good. You know, those big jars you'll see in the grocery stores or markets are right. 5 pounds.
Yes. Yeah.
So probably at least 3 of those.
Yeah, and I've made a lot of cider or sizer, 5 gallon, and adding up to 9 pounds of honey tops, and that'll really kick your butt.
Oh yeah, your alcohol percentage will get right up there because you're starting bricks.
It's pretty darn high, get
right up there.
Yeah, but it tastes so good and ages really well. That's what I like. I think that the honey brings a certain element to aging that a lot of ciders can be lacking in that way. The straight single variety apple or blend of apple. But when you have that honey in there, I don't know, do you find that true or am I talking about the...
Typically they say if you're doing like a homebrew mead, if you don't like it after 1 year, put it back in the basement for another year.
Yeah.
And, some of it, that works to a certain degree. If it's super funky, it may just never really improve, but it still makes a really nice marinade.
Mm-hmm.
There's other stuff you can do with it.
True.
But yeah, in general, mead will just continue to improve with age.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any early bottles from way back?
I have a little library in my basement at home, up on pallets. So I have some coming up on 10-year-old mead at this point.
Yeah. And are you noticing that you like that taste as it progresses, or I'm just kind of curious about aging and cellaring and that way, because I think that's a topic that is of a lot of interest. With beers, you could actually take a high gravity beer, put it away. I have a really old Utopia from Sam Adams, and that was like 21% when it came out in 2002, and it's just been sitting there.
It sort of keeps integrating.
Mm-hmm.
It typically gets smoother for any of the fruit added meads, like the sizer, if you do a piment or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes the fruit will start to attenuate. I mean, it'll sort of get blended in, but you won't have as much of like a punch of blackberries, or you won't have like a really apple snap to it.
Right.
But it'll sort of be blended in with the whole, sort of like aging a scotch or something like that. It's gonna add nuances and add character to it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, depending again a little bit on the honey varietals, you'll get more of the honey flavor kind of, it'll all kind of attenuate, and then the honey will sort of come back to be more prominent, and it may just be that the fruit portion is attenuating out.
Right.
But you get some really, really interesting flavors coming along as things age and develop.
And like apples, the type of honey you use will really affect that final, aging process.
Yeah, and what sort of flavors end up.
I just love this topic so much. It's like two of my favorite things, honey and apples.
Right.
It
really
is.
So many good things. The ancient stuff, right?
two of them food from the Bible, right?
Right.
Back in the day.
I always think of like mead, whenever I describe it, I always think of in terms of the Vikings,
right.
You know, and I heard that the Vikings would drink it before going to war, and then they'd rip off their clothes and go running naked into battle, and I could only imagine like people like running in the opposite direction, seeing like all these warriors, naked warriors running at them. Oh my gosh!
Crazed people.
Yeah,
I'd heard that I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know if that is how it went down. What happens at the raid stays at the raid. But I'd heard that, you know, possibly a basis for that was that they would flavor some of their beer or mead. Or you know whatever fermented beverages they were making with heather tips, Heather's another thing that can grow, especially in the damper climates.
Mm-hmm.
You can get ergot on that,
mm-hmm.
so you basically get people tripping on mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
and
who knows what else they added into
right.
it. I mean, any of these,
yeah, sort of pre hops.
Yeah.
There was
yeah.
people were adding all sorts of.
Yeah.
Crazy herbs.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes for flavor, some, you know, a lot of it was medicine. There's a lot of like medicinal effects.
Everybody's looking at their little heather plants right now and
being like, look
at
Saturday's coming right up.
Whee!
I think sometimes it's just mold and it'll just taste funky.
That's true.
But there's probably also sometimes
something going on.
Right.
Yeah, it could be. So getting back to the business, you
yeah.
all came together, and you spoke in the beginning, you know, in kind of comically about, you know, just kind of winging it. But is there tips for listeners out there? Because a lot of folks are commercial cider makers or, you know, mead makers and going that direction or looking at expanding, mm-hmm. bringing those businesses together. Is there anything that you would say, don't do this? Definitely avoid it. And then I want to go to the positive side, but
right.
anything looking back going, oh man, if we had only did this instead of that.
Right. That's a good question. I mean, we were kind of an interesting case because we were kind of two parallel companies with many of the people the same. I would say don't do that for too long because it's really messy.
Okay.
Right? We're keeping two sets of books. We're like charging back and forth. You know, somebody
yeah.
buys the pump, somebody buys the tanks, you know, somebody
yeah.
buys the
yeah.
bottling
yeah.
line. Mm-hmm. And that got crazy, which is why we decided to merge it all,
mm-hmm.
make it a workaround co-op, bring everybody in,
mm-hmm.
You know, make everybody equal owners and have the ability to more easily bring in other people rather than, you know, sort of as a worker co-op, there's a buy-in price.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than it being a taxable event where the four owners all sell 5% of their share to a fifth person coming in and then everybody ends up with 20%, the worker co-op is set up that it's not really a percentage. You're a one member, one vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's a buy-in price. Other people can add in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you're having a meeting, though, tonight. Is that with all the members, or is that...
So what we did last year is we did a direct, what's called a direct public offering. So, you know, there's been a lot of different stuff around crowdsourcing and who can buy and what, and
mm-hmm.
some amount of confusion around especially what that means in the alcohol realm. You know, because depending on your state, all your owners have to be registered.
Mm-hmm. And pass certain...
Right. And you
jump
have to
through hoops and
right,
make sure
to
that they qualify.
Pass your Cori checks.
Right.
You have to...
no felonies.
Right. You have to not be an owner in another business that has
right.
a different sort of license
mm-hmm.
as well. So what we did is we did this direct public offering
mm-hmm.
where we were basically selling preferred stock. So non-voting stock. In our company, that was dividendable, although not guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we aim to do at least a 5% dividend,
mm-hmm.
but it's the board is going to decide: did we make enough? Do we have enough to reinvest in the company?
Mm-hmm.
you know, so we, I think we ended up with somewhere around 30 investors. And, you know, so obviously there's no venture capital. There's nobody like, all right, we're going to take this brand and we're going to grow it for 5 years and we're going to figure out how to sell it to Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was people that were interested in investing locally and, you know, preserving local jobs, growing local jobs. You know, we now have 17 people on our payroll.
Great.
And investing in community. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's what we're interested in doing. So we're not on a, you know, we're not on a, what do they call it?
The trajectory.
Right. We're not on the, like, the hockey stick growth trajectory, but we're on a sustainable, you know, hopefully reasonable growth path.
Mm-hmm.
So these investors came on, and we're having a little gathering. This is the, I guess we finished the direct public offering last fall, so this is sort of the first meeting with everybody in. And we did do well enough that we declared a dividend, based on 2016 results.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Paid in this month.
Wow.
So we'll be thanking everybody for their support and, you know.
Yeah. So that's one way.
Onward.
A great way to grow a business, and I think a good model for listeners to kind of tuck in their shirt pocket as they're moving forward themselves.
Right.
Especially because I think in this industry, a lot of folks are coming in because they believe in sustainability, they believe in the local market, they want to produce a product that they are really offering quality at a level that you can't find necessarily out in the supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not mead on the shelves, at least not in this country in that way.
Not that many, yeah.
Right. And so it's interesting to just kind of see what you've been doing over the years and slowly moving along that upward trajectory and bringing people along at the same time. Your role is general manager.
Yep.
So what does that involve for you?
So,
and I want to just describe, when I saw Garth, he was walking outside, I was pulled in the parking lot, he was carrying a case with, looked like maybe empty bottles or something, over to the recycling thing. He was wearing, he's wearing shorts and a t-shirt. And I think on most days he's riding his bicycle to this location.
Yeah. Fortunately, we're two miles from my home here, which is
sweet.
One of the draws.
Yeah,
certainly. And I joked that general manager is basically doing everything that I haven't managed to convince anybody else to do, which is somewhat true.
Mm-hmm.
But it also speaks to sort of how the structure is set up. People are like, oh, you're in a co-op, you have to do everything by consensus, and, you know, everything is this long drawn out like voting process, or you know, everything's a kumbaya meeting to try to get anything done,
or a kombucha, yeah,
kombucha meeting. But, you know, in fact, we all have roles and responsibilities, and, you know, there can be people on the production floor, you know, just packaging line people that could buy into the co-op, and their boss is still the production manager.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still get fired if you're a co-op member.
Okay.
You know, as the general manager, I basically answer to the board, and the board currently, because we're still relatively small, is all of the members. So there's sort of a circular kind of accountability,
mm-hmm.
Work there. So, you know, so I deal with the sales manager, I deal with the production manager,
mm-hmm.
talking to the facilities people, you know, and they have people in their area, and they have, you know, they have domains that they're mm-hmm. interested in.
Yeah.
You know, that said, we're still a pretty small company. We try to keep a pretty flat hierarchy. We try to be very open to, you know, to input from, you know, anybody up and down or side mm-hmm. to side on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But it is set up that, you know, I'm responsible for, you know, overseeing
the operations,
higher level stuff. Do I still end up, you know,
carrying the boxes out to the recycling?
Taking out the recycle or loading the trucks or, you know, working on some of the marketing materials, you know, or, you know, going online and, you know, typing in to order more business cards or, or more flyers or something like that.
Yes. Do it all.
Yeah. So, we, you know, everybody pitches in on, you know, everybody has their zone of control and responsibility. Mm-hmm. And then we're obviously trying to, you know, trying to work together to make it all happen. The truck shows up and we haven't put the order together. We're like, quick, we need to get everybody, everybody on that.
You could feel that here. And I think it also speaks volumes of who you are too, as a person. I can imagine you not doing that. And I always feel that the vitality of the individuals that work at organization actually speaks out of the bottles when they're being poured. And I think this is a product that really shows that. So going back to that initial question, what would you avoid? What do you feel we really hit this like spot on? And if people are looking at growing their own business, whether it's insider or meat or whatever business, anything that you think, hey, you know, that's a good thing that we did. I'd do that again. Recommend it.
It certainly is nice to be in this, you know, to have been in this, you know, there's pluses and minuses, of course, but being in this incubator space, you know, that means we're sharing the trash, you know, we're sharing the forklift. Like, yes, it's great to have your own forklift and your own building and your, you know, you set the rent, but also then you're taking care of it all. And, there's a certain vitality and sort of cross collaboration with, you know, there's the Gold Thread herbal elixir guys, and you know they're bottling their product, and you know so sometimes just in the hall, like, oh, you know, how's that bottler working it for you? Or you had luck with that labeler, you know, so that sort of thing is pretty useful.
Yeah, I'd say.
You know, and sometimes you can get that in a place like this, which is sort of a business incubator, and so sometimes you can get that just from some of the trade organizations. You know, we're members of the American Mead Makers Association and the Kombucha Brewers International, and we go to those conferences, and they also have online forums, of course, and you know, just talking to other people in the biz about what's going on, what's worked for them.
So stay involved and look at those associations as really think tanks and be part of it. Go to those conferences. Don't stay insular.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. You know, and you know, you can both learn stuff, and even if you're like reasonably new, you probably have stuff to offer. And you know, Kurt definitely encourage people to offer it as well.
Yeah, that's something.
You know, and trying to stay, you know, and I think the, you know, one of the key things is staying, you know, true to what you want to make. Obviously the alcohol business, the beer business and all has been kind of wild these last few years. You know, tons of sort of craft everything.
Mm-hmm. And is craft? Yeah.
Right. What is craft? You know, fights over the, you know, how big, you know, once you get to 800,001, you're no longer craft or whatnot. So it's, you know, which is what's nice about the co-op structure is we're maintaining control. You know, again, we're not able to go out and get $10 million worth of venture capital to ramp things up like crazy and do a huge marketing campaign. But we are able to maintain control and make the decisions about what we want to make and what we want to sell. And, you know, obviously you're going to respond to the market somewhat, but we can also, you know, the great thing about having a little tasting room is people can come in and be like, oh, I really like your crazy beet kombucha, or oh, your spicy libation is a fun one. Are you going to put that in the bottles yet? And things like that, and you sort of get direct feedback, which is really really nice. And sort of figuring out, you know, when different inflection points are going to hit. Like, when does it make sense to go to distribution versus like doing all your own distribution?
Is there any kind of magic there in terms of going to that next level?
I don't, you know, it's
How many people I know here would drive around in their own cars with, like, you know, kegs in the back?
Right. And, yeah, that's the.
Or
that's,
on their bicycle pulling around. I think Dan Young, who's now like the on the board for the United States Association of Cider Makers, I think he used to like pull it around on his bike. So
driving around Greenfield,
delivering beer.
Yeah, with the people's pint. Yeah, so I mean, it's sort of where you hit the pain points and where you can't grow anymore with just what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Internally, I mean, obviously there's a cost for everything.
Yes.
You know, but just being aware of those. And
can you make money without spending money?
So we have ongoing battles about. So yes.
You can. Okay.
And right. No.
Oh, all right.
So, you know, you need to spend money and do your work. You know, work smarter, not harder.
Right. Definitely.
You know, so we've done relatively little, sort of what I would call marketing over the years, but we started doing a lot of farmers markets. So we would have, you know, farmers market or two a week, and that's a great way to both interact with the public, and actually even do some sales. And even when we started to get into stores, you're kind of doing a if we're in Somerville and we're doing a farmer's market there, we're only there for 4 or 6 hours a week or every other week. We're kind of doing a general tasting for any store within a 10-mile radius. People are like, oh, where can I get this? Well, you know, your local liquor store carries it as well. So if you can't find us here, you can still buy it at the at the store. Mm-hmm. So that was very useful. And you know, obviously we're doing manufacturing in the U.S. It's a kind of daft thing, but it, you know, so you know there's a lot of investment in equipment, but you can also start reasonably. You know, as I said, with those demijohns and some hand bottlers,
go a long way.
You can do quite a bit with that, and
especially when you're starting out and you're making your product and you're still trying to get it consistently spot on to sell.
Right, and I would not even say that ours is entirely consistent now. Sort of year to year. You know, as you know, from ciders, even if you get the same blend of apples, they're going to be a little bit different. It's still an agricultural product.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, people talk about wines like, oh, 2008 was a really good Cabernet year, you know, 2013. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll depend on the season and how things go. And sort of the same with the honey, same with the grapes, same with the cider.
Right on.
Which I think that's what really makes it craft. You know, and that's what makes it interesting. Like, yes, there's a lot of people like, I want to be able to make sure I'm drinking exactly the same thing every time. And there's also a lot of people who are like, oh, I hadn't noticed the chamomile hints in that honey before.
Mm-hmm.
We make a chamomile mead as well, but sometimes you'll get that just from the honey in our straight mead.
Don't feed it till your babies. The chamomile's not for going to bed.
That's right.
Or, you know, maybe grandma.
That's right. A little bit between the teeth and gums. Fixes up their teething kids right quick.
Oh, yeah. Puts a smile on their face. So let's talk a little bit more about your product at this point. I think your business model is just absolutely fascinating, and I know that Ciderville is going to be really kind of like craning their ear and listening because there's a lot of value there. When I first kind of met you and what you were doing, you had the ginger libation, and that was in many ways like your flagship. It felt like that.
As I said, we started that in 2010 after we'd been doing mead for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But because it was a higher volume thing, it was a little more accessible. It was a it was sort of a lighter, somewhat lower alcohol, a little fizzy.
Well, what is the alcohol?
That one's about 9%.
9%
versus most of our meads are 12 to 14.
Mm-hmm. And it's served in a large bottle.
Yep. So we started with the larger format. We now have these half size formats. Again, being a wine, we're not allowed to put things in 12-ounce bottles.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get 375-milliliter bottles, which is 12.9 mm-hmm. ounces and costs about 8 times as much as a 12-ounce bottle.
Right. Hoops.
Right.
Do you hear TTB?
Yeah, so it keeps it exciting.
So I'm pulling some bottles up here that you can hear as we're moving them. And it's a nice array. We'll get a photo of that. That one, I'm not sure what it is. But,
Magical Mystery.
So we talked about the cranberry, and then you have the Valley Sizer.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so the Valley Sizer is our straight sizer. It's labeled just apple honey wine. Mm-hmm. That one was bottled in 2015, so that's just about a year and a half aged now. And I believe that was a Clarkdale cider, possibly Pine Hill. And
it has a nice label on it too, Mount Grace Anniversary Sizer.
Yep. So this year, I guess that was actually officially last year. We're now into 2017. But 2016 was the 30th anniversary of Mount Grace Land Trust, which is a local land trust, obviously into preserving land, preserving farms.
Great organization.
So that paired really well with what we're interested in, what we're about. So we did some specially labeled.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did about 30 cases specially labeled of the Valley Sizer.
Nice.
To help raise money and awareness about the land trust.
And you're spelling Valley and then Sizer. It's C-Y-Z-E-R.
Yeah.
And I've seen Sizer spelled other ways too. Is there a particular reason why you chose that spelling?
I think it looks cooler than just putting an I in there.
Hey, that's all we need. That's all we need, man.
Right? You gotta put the. You know,
it looks pretty cool.
It works well. You got that. Got the hanging Y. We got the Z Shazam going on there.
All right. That works. So the next bottle here is Ginger Libation Hopped.
Yep. So that's our newest one. Out this spring.
Wow.
As I said, we've been making the ginger libation since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done a local, we've done a blueberry version, and we started talking to Four Star Farm last year, or maybe even 2 years ago. We got in a little late on the hops.
On the hops,
and so we'd been making this one actually just with Citra hops.
Okay.
Which actually they don't have at Four Star, but they're really a nice fruity mm-hmm. hop that works really well with sort of the fruitiness of the ginger libation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dry hopped one. That one's been pretty popular. It's out in a few keg accounts around Massachusetts, and these 375 bottles just came out.
When you were working with the hops, let me actually ask you a different question. When you hop this, mm-hmm. is it like... Are you making it off on the side in the, where you've infused some of the ginger libation and then you pour that liquid in? Or do you dry hop into your entire batch of ginger libation, which I'm sure you make when you're doing this, you make a whole bunch of?
Yeah, we dry hop into a full, say, 500 gallons or
okay.
so.
And the clarity of your I can see the clarity in this because it doesn't have a label. Clarity is fantastic. So how are you filtering out the lees?
Right. We have some conicals. So we are cold crashing it.
To drop all the sediment out.
Yeah, try to get the sediment out. And we do lightly filter it.
Yeah.
Just to, obviously to, get it in sort of like super chunky mm-hmm. anything. Pineapple. Any of the hop leaves or hop particles out of there,
mm-hmm.
There'll certainly be some in there. I think you can even see in this one. There's a little haze down
just
the bottom.
A little bit, yeah.
And some of them will have more than others. Some of them will depend on how long they they sit. What they get mm-hmm. down there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it's a bottle conditioned product, so they're we're not filtering out all the yeast. There's still going to be some yeast in the suspension.
It's a live food.
Yeah, so that'll give it a little bit of fizz.
Yeah.
It has not great implications for long-term shelf stability. So we are actually looking into what, at least on the libation side.
Okay.
The mead seems to work well, and we leave that as a non-sulfated, non.
Yeah, I was always wondering about that.
Thing.
Like, you know, how do you bottle a mead and not have it become, continue to ferment and then have little bottle bombs?
That's why it's all 12 to 14%, because our yeast will pretty much die out at that point.
Okay.
They're not super dry meads, so there's still plenty of fermentable sugars in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the yeast we use, and it's primarily a red wine mm-hmm. yeast varieties, it can't go much higher.
Further.
So there might be like, I've had some sizers like, 3 years later and you'll get a little fizz, but you don't get the bombs, which is good.
Yeah, that's great.
No.
And the bottles are really nice too. I really like the shape of the bottles.
Yeah, here. Sort of a Belgian.
Yeah.
Belgian-esque.
Yeah.
Things.
Unique.
Yeah, and then the whiskey sizer is the last one there, and that starts with the same base as the Valley sizer, and then we give it 6 months in some sort of whiskey or bourbon barrel. So 2 years ago, this one's more recent. 2 years ago, we got a bunch of barrels from Bully Boy Distillery out of Boston, and then this year. Obviously, there's more and more. Everybody's barrel aging everything.
Everybody wants barrels.
So it's a little bit iffier on in terms of what you get. We got, I believe, 5 or 6 Buffalo Trace, and then 5 of 4 Roses.
Okay.
Ones as well. Mm-hmm. So we use the 4 Roses for our buckwheat mead. And then we use the Buffalo Trace on the whiskey sizer.
And when you're saying buckwheat mead, you're using a buckwheat honey.
Buckwheat honey,
which is a dark honey that folks
it's got
listening.
A good tang to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you see it in the jar, it's like really, really dark, and it's not. I always enjoyed it. I got it when I was a kid because there was a local beekeeper living nearby, and it's intense. It's almost. The difference between a light beer and a dark beer.
It's got
like,
a little more molasses-y kind of thing. And definitely has a tang to it. So some people aren't keen on it, but it works really nicely in a barrel-aged mead.
Nice. Yep. And then the ginger libation. And I think what I like about your name, Ginger Libation, is you're not calling it ginger beer. Because there's a lot of ginger beer.
Part of that
beer.
Is because of the TTB. Because we're a winery, we can't
call
it beer. But also we wanted something that was...
It stands
different.
Out. It stands out.
We don't want to call it just ginger beer.
You still know that it's has an ABV on it. It's not soda.
You'd be surprised how many questions we get about that.
I bet.
Farmers markets and other.
They're handing it to their kids and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Right.
Yeah. And especially if we have all our products and we have our kombucha, people are like, all right, so
the kombucha's okay.
Sometimes people will be like, I'm not sure about that kombucha, but I'll have some of that ginger libation. That doesn't have any alcohol in it. It doesn't like, well, actually it has 9%. Mm-hmm. That's more than your average, your average beer.
Are you selling this in like 6-packs? Is this, how do you sell these guys?
So that one comes in.
A single?
Yep, kegs. There's 375 singletons and the large format bottles, the 750 milliliter.
Nice. Well, that's a nice choice there.
Yeah, so, And the smaller bottles are do pretty well in restaurants. It's also a nice size it makes a great cocktail mixer.
Yes, it does.
So you can get 3 to 5 cocktails out of one of those little bottles.
Mm-hmm. I find it really helps me get through, like when I need to clear my throat a little bit, or that ginger is just so good for you, and it just almost feels medicinal, even though it's not a medicinal product in that way, but there's something so medicinal in my mind about ginger. It's healthy for you.
It's a lot of ginger. We use a couple hundred pounds of fresh ground organic ginger in every batch.
Wow.
And those batches are up to like 500 gallons. Yeah.
Now, what are you using here to make, you see you have the conical, what size are these conical?
So we have some
stainless steel.
Yeah, you know? We have some 1,000-gallon conicals, and then our primary fermentation, we have some 500-gallon wine tainers.
Mm-hmm.
And then for many of the meads, we also have sort of 200 to 300-gallon.
Right, because those guys are going to be sitting there for a while too. The mead,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an interesting setup here business-wise because you have the mead, which takes a while to produce. Mm-hmm. So while that's producing, you're able to make the ginger libation. What's the turnaround for the ginger libation?
It's closer to like a three-week kind of turnaround.
Yeah, like you were saying.
So more like a beer.
And the sizer?
And the sizers and the meads, you know, it's sort of the initial fermentation is like a 2 to 3 month kind of process, and we'll rack it off and let it go another 3 months, and then we'll rack it off, and then we'll let it age, and you know, another 3 months, you know, up to the full year, and then maybe we'll, you know, it's sort of like a, you know, sell no wine before it's time kind of thing. So we'll try it, and when it seems pretty good, we'll bottle it, and then we'll leave it in the bottles for a while before we sell those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate that you don't sell it before it's time, and you know that it's going well.
Right, we want it to be.
When it's going out the door. How about in this little bottle here? Is that a little unknown?
It has no label. It's unknown just because I grabbed a few bottles from our random shelf.
Yeah.
It's most likely just a ginger libation. It was bottled on 420, so maybe it's a special variety, but I don't think so. I think we bottled the regular ginger libation.
We like those varieties. All right. Well,
we're a rec state.
That's right.
We're not doing any herbal additions.
What do you think about the possibilities of that? Working with cannabis as like a spice to.
I imagine the. We're federally licensed, and you need to do a formula approval for most of these.
Mm-hmm.
There would be an issue there, and also they're still working out any of the recreational stuff for Massachusetts. And I imagine there will be a lot of, at least initially, they're going to try to keep all that very separate, right? You know, they're having enough issues trying to figure out what goes into edibles, but trying to mix it with booze, you know, is not always ideal.
Yeah, although there are some beers out there that do that. I'm not really sure how they do it, so.
Yeah, there's a couple Colorado and Oregon.
I don't really get it, but I have seen it. And
yeah.
I imagine that's going to, especially around the hopped ciders and your hopped ginger libation.
Right. That might become a thing eventually.
Down the road.
Yeah.
Next conversation.
We'll see
how. We'll be getting ready for that.
We'll see how the legislation goes. See what sort of demand there is.
Yeah.
You know, and what the outlets. Like, probably that's not going to be something that you could then sell in, you know, a regular liquor store. Right? It's going to have to be a specially licensed, you know, recreational. So.
Yeah.
TBA. We got plenty on our plate.
Yeah, well, they're trying to add in a whole... We keep on referring to the TTB, which is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade Commission, and they're the ones who really manage all the licensing, and they're still trying to catch up with the Cider Act, which was approved last year and came in effect this year, which increased the alcohol by volume that you can have in cider now. It could go up to 8.5. Right. So there's a bit of catching up. I don't know why, because cider is as old as this country.
It's been around for a while, but
but we need more cider drinkers.
They were just used to it. Used to it being a it's just a little 3% thing. It's just when your sweet cider happens to go bad in the back of your fridge. But now there's people that are making
really good stuff. Thank goodness. Well, this has been fantastic. I think there's a lot of value here, again, for any business from that perspective. And certainly the range of product that you offer here, all these libations are really magnificent. And folks who have heard about Cider Days, who have been in the area during Cider Days, I know that you you're always having a tasting during cider days?
Yep, we do open house both days of Cider Days weekend, mm-hmm. which is usually the first weekend in November always. Out here in Franklin County.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a great time. We've got a lot of good stuff going on out here.
Mm-hmm. We do. And the ArtBev, which is a short name for this company, is just one of those good things here. I really appreciate you taking the time today and chatting with all of us in Ciderville.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
That was Garth Shandyfield of the Artesian Beverage Cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And if you want to see some photos of the cooperative and get the contact information, just go to episode 87 at ciderchat.com. I would like to thank all the good folks who have signed up to date to become patrons of Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. And right now there are 19 people of goodwill and strong constitution who said, heck yeah, I want to support Cider Chat. And you can do that for as little as $1 a month, and it then goes up from there, and the rewards come back too. And soon, once there becomes 20 people, and I've been waiting a while for this, I will start raffling off to that group a poster that was commissioned by Randall Graham of Bonnie Doon Vineyard in Santa Cruz. Now, if you don't know Randall Graham, check out episode 12. And if you're a regular listener of Cider Chat, you know I have been talking about him all the time. I was going to see Eric Bordelais in Normandy, France last year. Randall is known as the Rhone Ranger and is an epic figure in the wine culture. In fact, thanks to Randall Graham, we have screwed-on bottle caps on wine bottles. Back when it was considered like, are you kidding me? You can't do that to a high-end bottle. And he did it. And it's just like a whole collection of really cool people in the world of wine and libations. And Randall Graham's one of them. You should check out Bonnie Doon Vineyard if you get a chance cruising through Santa Cruz. But anyways, I'm going to be raffling that off. I'm looking for 20 people. And of course, if there's more, they're going to get it. But man, that's going to be quite a little prize to get. So check out Patreon page for Cider Chat and sign up today to help keep this chat going up. And if you're a commercial cidery and you want to really get involved and support a podcast that is cider dedicated, please consider joining the Cider Going Up campaign page via Patreon, such as Current Cider did in Pennsylvania back when I launched that program over a year ago. And every time you get some Current Cider, you're actually helping to support Cider Chat. It's all good news out there, isn't it, in Ciderville? Mm-hmm. Yep, I think so. You could help Ciderville by shouting out, too, that this podcast exists. Grab your friend's phone and help them subscribe today. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!